Ida passed away, and Mikhail focused more closely on the Hesperiades. Andreas has actually been working intensively on the Ithomiini since 1988 and has reared over 70 species from the southeastern Brazil. And together with P.C. Moda, a large set of characters were defined from the immatures and added to an additional morphology.
We have decreased a large number of people who've provided us with samples of Western corn rootworms both in Europe and in the United States, and they certainly deserve our thanks as well. So that's all I have to say. Are there any questions? Plenty of discussion, not many really solid ideas. One thing to keep in mind is that you did have this eastward range expansion of the species in the United States, so it may be that the densities around sort of major international airports didn't get high enough until comparatively recently that you would actually start seeing some movement, but It's an intriguing question, and there's no really solid ideas as to why it's suddenly picked up like this. I can't. It could well be. Clearly, they're getting onto aircraft somewhere. Something I didn't show you that Mark has also been looking at is whereabouts in North America these introductions might be coming from, which is not easy because, the population in the United States is basically homogenous from the west of the Corn Belt right across to the East Coast. But he can discount places like, well, Mexico and Arizona and Texas, and there's a general trend that the probability tends to go up as you go northeast. Now, how solid that is, it's certainly not solid enough to point your finger at an individual airport and say that's where it's coming from. So there's still plenty of large airports that could be involved in these transatlantic introductions, and those may be passenger airports or they may be freight.
Okay, thank you. Before I begin, I want to begin by saying that this is a collaborative effort. Work includes people like Wade French, who's from the USD Brookings Lab, who supplied the insects, and was really instituted initially by Art Schaffsma, who's also at the University of Guelph, but at our Ridgetown campus. And the work represents primarily the work of Frey Garibagi, who is a postdoc. The objective here is to find a marker for the rotation-resistant western corn rootworm. And Tom already mentioned one approach, which is to test a range of random markers and see if you can find an association between the phenotype and a molecular marker. And we've done some work with rapid markers to with that approach, and found the same as Tom, in that you find some markers that are at larger frequencies in the rotation-resistant individuals, but nothing that's diagnostic that says this is the reason or this is the difference. So another approach is to use a candidate gene approach, and this is a bit risky because you're essentially saying, okay, this is it, and I'm going to try it out and see, and that's the story I'm going to tell you today. The candidate gene approach in this case was initiated by some information that's available in the literature on a behavior gene in Drosophila. This behavior gene, so I'm going to give a little bit of an introduction to this gene. The behavior gene in this case determines a difference in the behavior of the larva in the presence of food. I'm afraid of touching this because it looks like it's going to advance. let's just see. Okay. So you have rovers and sitters. Rovers, when they're on a patch of food on a plate, aren't happy with that. They'll actually move out of that patch, look for other sources of food. Sitters, on the other hand, stay within that patch of food. And it's a single gene trait difference, and it's triggered by food. So if they're in a plate that's completely covered by food, then the difference is still apparent in the travel distance between rovers and sitters. But if they're on a plate with no food, they travel essentially the same. So it's not a question that the rovers or the sitters are sluggish. They just are happy with the food that they have. The sitters are, and the rovers move. work was done then to locate the position of that gene, and it was found that that gene went into a locus that coded for a cyclic guanosine monophosphate dependent protein kinase. So we'll call it PKG for short. And this particular gene, then you could transform sitters to rovers by taking the rover allele and using that for transforming the Drosophila. And rovers were associated with higher levels of the transcript and of the enzyme compared to sitters. Similar genes have also been isolated for other from other individuals. Honeybee, in this case, is a developmental difference. You have nurse bees that stay close to the hive. They're young bees. As they mature, they move from the hive to become forager bees. And again, in this case, the difference between them is the expression levels for the PKG gene. And in nematodes also, you have a difference in gene expression of a PKG that is involved in movement of the nematodes and egg laying. I'm going to skip that. in the Drosophila, the gene is quite large, about 40 kb in size, and it produces a number of different transcripts, different size transcripts here, by splicing reactions. And the one that's focused on most is the T1 transcript there. The gene itself, when you look at its structure, when it codes for into a protein, it has a number of different motifs. It has a dimerization motif. So in fact, the protein acts as a dimer. It has two cyclic GMP binding sites, and it has a kinase domain. And down here you can see the way in which it dimerizes. And when it's a dimer, this kinase here is actually inhibited by a portion of the protein. When the cyclic GMP binds, this thing opens up, and so then the kinase region here is exposed, and it can then participate in phosphorylating a protein and then have its effect. So that's the way in which people understand the function of that gene. So how did we start? We took sequences from a variety of different insects and aligned them to identify regions of high homology here, and used those with PCR to amplify out sequences. And here you can see from cDNA from Diabrotica, then we have a fragment that is the same size as what's amplified out from Drosophila. And this just shows the DNA sequence and the translation when you do the blast for that sequence there, and then comes up with 81% identity to silkworm cyclic GMP-dependent protein kinase, and it has the motifs that I talked about before. Now, in Drosophila, the difference between sitters and rovers is related to the level of expression of that gene. And so we were also interested in looking at levels of the transcript from that gene. And so we use the ribosomal intergenic region there as an internal control for our real-time PCR studies here. So we always then compare the level of expression of the cyclic GMP, our protein, compared to this internal control. Okay. Our preliminary studies indicated that the foraging gene transcript was higher in heads compared to thoraxes in the insects. And our initial study then compared males and females and normals and variants. And the insects that we used in the comparison here were from established colonies that in the Brookings lab. This is real-time PCR results then, just to show that the patterns that we see behave well and give good linear plots for our to allow us to do the quantification.